We're talking with the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, Oklahoma Congressman Frank Lucas. And Congressman, you're right here in the middle of your district today, 3rd District in, Eastern Major County.
Eastern Major County, Ringwood, America. And the best part, Ron, is it's a clear, sunny day. The grass is green. I see some folks getting ready to put down some anhydrous ammonia on their wheat ground. The weather is so much better now than it has been for the previous 2.5 years. I'm as optimistic as my constituents are.
Now, let's see how the optimism holds out as we talk about this farm bill process. We're in the obviously middle of your August congressional recess. A lot of your colleagues are back in their home districts as well. What's your hope as you go back in September? Are you going to be able to break loose with some things?
We have 9 legislative days in September. I hope to see quick action, whether we do something or we don't do something, quick action on whether there will be a freestanding nutrition bill with its passage promptly, or the decision not to offer it on the floor, whatever the case may be, by leadership, then being allowed to move to conference so that Senator Cochran and Senate Chairwoman Stabenow and myself and Ranking Member Peterson perhaps can get things worked out and get to the point where with a formal conference committee perhaps we can conclude this. But, Ron, there's a lot of pieces up in the air. Much of the national media focuses on the nutrition title. The Senate's $4 billion in reform. The House committee passed version, $20 billion in reform. Supposedly, the bill that we might see on the floor the first few days back in September, $40 billion in reform. Whatever the case may be, all the numbers are dramatically different. How do you sort that out? But from the perspective of rural America, just as important as that are really more challenging issues, because the commodity title perspective, and that's still the heart and core of a farm bill, the safety net that enables us to raise the food and fiber we need. The Senate has a program essentially built around the concepts of shallow loss crop revenue. The House of Representatives has a version of that and price protection. Some people like to call it target prices, but choice is the main issue there. How do we get to a point where, from the House perspective, we have choice? Because all commodity groups and all regions need to be able to participate, or it's not really a federal farm bill.
Are you disappointed that the corn and soybean groups have really held as hard as they have on the shallow loss and the Senate version?
Let's just say that the corn folks were very focused when corn was above $6 a bushel. Now that we've passed the $5 mark going south, now that we are bouncing around in the $4 range, depending on which weather forecast you get, I would say, Ron, there's a distinct possibility that shallow loss revenue might not even work for them if we continue on our present trends. And what do I mean by that? We planted the most corn last year since 1937. We had a horrible weather year, but yet we still had sufficient stocks to meet our needs. Not a lot of cushion, but to meet our needs. This year we've planted the most corn since 1936, and I know there are weather problems in the western part of the country, and I know there's concerns about the temperatures in the northern part of the country, but if we even do halfway decent, we'll have an amazing amount of corn this year, and that price pressure will only drive it farther down. Now, if you put all of your eggs in the basket on crop revenue, which is based on a multi-year average price and a slight deviation from that price, it was a great concept at $6 or $7. But at $4, it's not what it is, and that brings to issue the House perspective of choice. If a safety net is to help you in the toughest of times, not guaranteeing you a profit, not guaranteeing you great years after year after year, but simply to be there when the bottom falls out, if we have a record corn crop, we might just see. And oh, by the way, Ron, don't forget, Energy and Commerce is looking at the renewable fuel standard. Chairman Upton has appointed a 4-member working group to address that. With 40% approximately of the last, let's say, recent corn crops going through the ethanol cookers, any adjustment there throws their supply and demand out of whack. So I would say if we really give producers a choice, doesn't matter what part of the country they're in, they may take price. They may want that safety net for the worst of times and take their chances in the best of times, which is just the opposite of what shallow loss crop revenue is based on.
Regarding crop insurance, a lot of folks continue to take pot shots outside of agriculture, especially. A lot of people would really like to see that support dramatically scale back.
Ron, the people who are after us, and I don't care whether that you define them as the hard left or the hard right or some combination thereof, their target for years and years was the direct payment program. That's gone. No matter what version of the bill you have, the direct payments won't be there anymore. So that pool of money is gone. The last real pool of cash left in the non-nutrition side of the farm bill is crop insurance. And they're just going to attack us. I believe we defend ourselves this time, but it's not just the every five-year farm bill. This process also goes on in the annual appropriation cycle, defending the money, and in that ever-so-often process when the administration renegotiates the reimbursement rates, the administrative cost for the crop insurance companies, they'll attack there. But we have to defend it. That is going to be our real functioning safety net. We have to preserve the revenue stream to enable that. I know there are a lot of folks who are going to say when all of the payments are totaled up for the 2012 crop year, oh my goodness, what did it cost? Well, 2012 was an anomaly. I stood in a cornfield in 2012 and had in Illinois and had a farmer remind me that was the absolute worst year since 1958. Well, if that's the worst year since 58, I'd say probably we have a good investment in crop insurance because there was a lot of good years in between. And remember, in crop insurance, producers pay a premium to have access to that coverage. So in a perfect weather year, in a perfect price year, you pay and you get nothing back. But that's the way all insurance works. It's when you need the help, when Mother Nature provides a calamity, that the payment comes in and you pay premiums for years or decades for that year or two or however long you have to have it. It's just like all other insurance. And my friends outside of rural America need to remember, if you're going to have federal flood insurance, if you're going to have federal disaster insurance, if you're going to do all of these other things, maybe investing a few resources for those ever so often bad years to make sure we all have enough to eat. Maybe that's a good investment, Ron.
The folks, some of the good folks from Heritage Action have been quoted, I think, The Hill or The Roll Call, or one of the Washington, D.C., inside the D.C. Beltway deals, indicated that they'd like to see an extension of farm policy so they could have another whack at talking with you about a 21st century farm policies, as they called it.
Whack is the exact phrase. They've tried to whack us for some time in rural America. They are afraid now that they're not going to be successful, so if they could push the process off for one more year, they'd have 12 more months to pot shoot us in the back. I simply say we need a five-year farm bill now. We need to get our work done now. I think the Speaker understands that. I think more and more of the House leadership as a whole understands that. We just have to get our work done on the floor, get to conference committee, work out the differences with the Senate, and oh, by the way, hope that the President will sign the bill.
One last question. As far as the concept that you inserted into the farm bill, only farm bill, of permanent law changes, I know that you've probably taken a lot of criticism on that.
Ron, I've taken a huge amount of criticism over that. But understand, I have watched the legislative process for some time now. I've seen how things are done in other areas of federal language. I know having a process that compels us to do a new farm bill every 5 years keeps all the lobbyists employed, keeps all the think tank groups employed, keeps all the blood and political gore stirred up into the air. But I'd simply say this. If we can come up with a good farm policy that works for everybody in every region, and if we could make that permanent law, then that, I believe, gives us a much better feel from which to battle in 5 years and 10 years and 15 years on down the road. But that said, it's the will of the House. The Senate seems to be very determined that we not change the status quo in the old law. Maybe that's a point that they'll prevail on. I just know that is my obligation, my responsibility, to try and do everything I can to protect my constituents in rural America and rural America in general. If thinking outside the box sometimes enables us to be better positioned for 5 years or 10 years or a generation down the road, I've got an obligation to at least look at it and try and come up with ways to address it.
Why just Title I? Why not the entire length and breadth of the Farm Bill?
Simply because the Title I is the traditional title. It's always been governed under the 38 and 49 Act, and I can only carry so much of a load at any one time.